2001 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium, Session 132, Contemporary Mormon Filmmaking, Does Johnny Lingo Live in Brigham City? The panel consists of Heather Bickley, Richard Butcher, Emily Asplund, Fred Esplund, Barbara Bannon, and Stephen Williams.
You're in the panel on Mormon filmmaking. If that's not where you want to be, you should check your schedule, but that's the topic of the day. We welcome you here, and we will have that discussion. In fact, we had a pre-meeting to get ready for this session and had quite a lively discussion on what the heck Mormon filmmaking is. Is it by Mormons, about Mormons, or for Mormons, or all three? And that will be, I think, be part of the discussion we have here today. We have a panel who will introduce themselves as a part of the discussion, which includes, from my left, your right, Barbara Bannon and Richard Dutcher, Steve Williams, Heather Bigley, and Emily Asplund. And we are going to begin the discussion today with brief introductory remarks from each of the panelists, and then we will have some discussion among ourselves, and toward the end of the program, which I understand is to end at 12:45, so at about 12:30 or thereabouts, we'll have interactive discussion with the audience. So if you don't mind, Barbara, we'll just go down the line. Barbara, if you want to begin with your statement.
Actually, it's less a statement and just offering a few perspectives. First of all, I'm Barbara Bannon. I am the theater critic for the Event News Weekly, and I've kind of worn two hats in the Salt Lake community for about 20 years. I cover theater, but I have a strong background in film. I did graduate work in film studies at the University of Utah. I've taught film at both the U of U and at BYU. And I've worked for the Sundance Film Festival as the editor of their film guide and catalog and a writer for them for 13 years. So that gives you at least something. And I'm sort of feeling also like a veteran of Richard Dutcher panels. If you were here last year, I also was on the God's Army panel. I wanted to, actually, and I'm not LDS. So I think I get on these panels as sort of the token non-LDS person to put things in a slightly different perspective. And so my definition, when we went to the pre-meeting and everyone said, okay, what is Mormon filmmaking? I said, Mormon filmmaking is a good film that happens to be made by a Mormon. So that's kind of the perspective that I'm coming from. And to sort of be a little more specific about that, I think that what I mean by that is a person who uses the icons of his culture and religion and way of looking at the world to create art that I feel can be enjoyed by everyone. I am one of the people who doesn't feel that Richard's films, even though I know he intends them for an LDS audience, is restricted in any way to that audience. I think that they have a great deal to say to a much broader population, and I am someone who celebrates that as a member of that broader population. For instance, let's take Brigham City as the example, since we're using that as our exemplar this morning. This is the story of a town where people happen to be LDS, but it could be any small town which is an enclosed society. So a society that's dominated by one way of looking at the world. And I think one thing that's nice is you see that crossover between the temporal and the spiritual in the character of Wes, who is the character that Richard plays, because he's both the sheriff and the bishop, so that he's, you know, the figure of the temporal society and the figure of the spiritual society as well. So whenever people come into his office, he's always saying, okay, now you're talking to me as the bishop or the sheriff. So it's a community, a society that's very tightly knit and governed by a single perspective, kind of. But, I mean, you can think of any number of small towns in America that would fit this definition, that would not necessarily be Mormon communities. The film, I think, very beautifully uses the metaphors from the LDS religion, the prayer and the sacrament meeting specifically, to communicate the themes of the film to the audience. But these really get their power because of what they say about the community as much as what they say about the LDS religion. And I think that's where the power of that final scene, which I think is a very... how many people have seen the film? Good, okay. The power of that final scene in the sacrament meeting comes from the meaning of community. You know, it's a community, yes, it's defined by LDS religion, but it's also a community of people who care for each other and who have a way of life that's kind of bonded them together. One thing that I found really interesting, and this throws a little perspective also on what I'm trying to say about the broader audience, is the pattern of insiders and outsiders that Richard uses in the film. And this sort of puts the idea of Mormon filmmaking in the perspective that I want to put it in. In the film, outsiders are suspect. insiders are the people who are trusted. And I think that even though there are some people who, by sort of technically are insiders, they are outsiders in some way, and they're the people we kind of suspect as the film goes along. There's Steve, the photographer, who's kind of set outside by his own isolation. There's Ralph, the construction boss, who kind of is coming from another perspective in terms of looking at economic development as a good thing, a positive thing, whereas a lot of people in the community, including Wes, are thinking about it as something to be avoided, something to be worried about. And there's Ed, who's Peg's boyfriend, who during the course of the film gets officially accepted into the church and into the community, but comes from that perspective somewhat of an outsider. And those are the people, and it's very clever the way Richard casts some suspicion, at least in certain scenes, on them. And for those who haven't seen the film, I'm not going to tell you who the killer really is, but when we discover who that person is, at first we're concerned because he seems to be an insider. And so we feel, oh, the disease is coming from within the community. We then discover that, of course, because, as it turns out, because of the way he's manipulated things, he's not an insider at all. He is an outsider. And so the community remains intact. You know, it's being attacked by somebody outside, not somebody inside. I equate myself in this film with Meredith, who is the FBI lady. She's, not that I want to be in the FBI, or I've ever had any dealings with the FBI, but anyway, hope never to have any, by the way. But she is the ultimate outsider. She's come into this community, she's really not a part of it in any way, but she understands everything that goes on, and she has great compassion for Wes and for his situation, and she understands the church scene and what they say about community. She's very moved by that final scene as well. So I think that this indicates, you know, by having her in this way, in the film, that outsiders can really relate to the film and to the community that it sets up. So I think in this way, Brigham City has very much to say to a non-LDS audience, because they also can understand what happens in that final scene and partake in the emotional power. And just to give a little parallel, if some of you have seen The Road Home, which has been playing at the Tower, the Zhang Yimou film, the Chinese film, Zhang Yimou is almost the last Chinese filmmaker of his generation to stay in China. All of the other ones are expatriates because the Chinese government is so oppressive and so restrictive on the kind of films. He says he can only make films within his own community. And yet that film is a very powerful film for all of us. So I think it shows that within your own community you can use what you gathered from your own community to make films that speak to the entire world. So, Richard, you're the Zhang Yimou of Salt Lake City.
Steve Williams. I'm an MFA student up at the university, and I'm back finishing an MFA after I started 12 years ago in an MFA program at USC. After about a year and a half, decided it was going to drive me crazy to be in this industry, so I left it and now I'm back. So Anyway, to begin with, I'd like to tell about a recent experience I have had. I was recently in a musical comedy as a performer with the Emily Company in July. It was written by Stephen Sondheim, which many of you will know is one of the great composers of the American Musical Theater. The musical dealt with some adult themes. It was called It's Company, if you're familiar with it. It's an ironic look at marriage, love, and sex. There's nothing in it that couldn't be shown on primetime network television or maybe even after-school programming. However, my own siblings, all very active Mormons, which I am not, were very concerned about seeing it. There's no rating system for plays, and they've become comfortable using the rating system to judge the suitability of movies, both for themselves and for their children. They didn't want to see anything that conflicted with their values. Now, I tend to be somebody who sees everything. Anything I think has artistic merit that is told honestly, I will see, and I'm very oblivious to the rating system. I don't have children myself, so I'm in a different situation from them. But it was a bit of a shock to me and somewhat disconcerting to see how concerned they were to see my play, that they were going to be affected in a negative way if they saw it. And I tell this story because I see a parallel with this kind of this yearning for Mormon filmmaking. I think that generally speaking, Mormons would like something safe, something that they can trust will not be too upsetting to the way they believe. I follow a different set of standards personally, but I can certainly understand that mindset. It occurred to me that Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat has won this seal of approval, as shown by its many productions in Utah every year. Mormons love entertainment, and they want something that they can call their own, I believe. If a film or a play passes this values test, Mormons can be ardent, almost fanatical supporters of it. The idea of a genre of Mormon filmmaking perhaps holds this promise. Now, having said that, I admit that I don't like the term Mormon filmmaking as applied to all films made by or about Mormons. It smacks of marketing to me. I think that the term belongs only to films that are actually produced by the Mormon Church. I think it's a very limiting and confusing label. I hope there's never a genre of Mormon films because I think that this category would be misleading. However, I think that Mormon life should be portrayed in film. I applaud the work of the Fletcher. I was told 2 years ago by a screenwriting professor that Mormonism was box office death and was warned to avoid writing about Mormon culture at all costs. And I think he's proved that stories about Mormons can be interesting and compelling to both the Mormon audience and the general public. The main issue here to me is that good movies consist of a compelling story, interesting characters, universal themes, told in an interesting, engaging way. I think this is the aim of any good filmmaker, and this is what works in Brigham City and God's Army. Maybe Dutcher has missionary objectives with these movies, but they don't feel like propaganda to me. What came across me in these films was a very accurate and moving depiction of the culture in which I was raised and where I now live. It was startling to me because it is so rarely that one sees Mormons or Utah culture portrayed in films, in mainstream films. I think Mormon culture is interesting and should be depicted on the screen, combined with an intriguing story and believable characters. At a meeting of this panel a week ago, we had a very interesting discussion about the responsibility of so-called Mormon filmmakers, or filmmakers who happen to be Mormon, regarding the way Mormon life and beliefs are depicted. I have to say truthfully that I believe that the idea of responsibility can be harmful to the making of good films. The filmmaker needs freedom in order to create something that is transcendent. If he or she is too worried about preserving an image or making one character representative of the whole religion, the film will be inherently less truthful and less interesting. The best films, I believe, are made from the unique vision of one person, who then convinces others of the value of his or her vision in order to get the film made. I think when everybody has their hand in the pot, the artistry and value of the film suffers. Film history provides countless examples of this. Filmmaking is a collaborative medium, but smart directors have always come up with a way to maintain creative control over their work and keep their vision pure. I think that the fact that a film may offend some segment of the audience or make them uncomfortable is not necessarily a bad thing. I think a filmmaker has to resist the temptation of being too responsive to the way people would like to be depicted. In summary, I believe all the fuss and attention that movies receive reflects the power of the medium. It's been said that movies are most like our dreams. Their power over us emotionally is enormous. I'm glad to see filmmakers who are Mormon enter this ring and tell us great stories through film. I hope that there are more and more of them, and that they will share a vision with us that is free of excessive self-consciousness and totally their own vision.
I did my undergrad at BYU in film, and right now I'm a punk grad student out at the University of Houston. So I say a lot of annoying things and use big words just to impress myself. We're all here because we want to talk a little bit about Mormon filmmaking, and Stephen's already said that he doesn't really like that term. But I'm going to use it a lot here. Brigham City is a pretty solid film, which will hopefully inspire other filmmakers to tell their Mormon stories. Their Mormon stories, hopefully from Latin America or from Africa, or their Mormon stories from Canada or Maryland or wherever Mormons are. But it seems to me that those of us who use the term Mormon filmmaking need to define whether we are discussing culturalism or theology. And I worry that future Mormon filmmakers will stay within the safety of cultural Mormonism and not attempt spiritual transcendence. We have a rare opportunity, I think, right now within the space that we are, just starting out with Mormon filmmaking, a genre that Stephen doesn't have, to redefine what filmmaking is or to create a new filmmaking. I'm not discussing clean entertainment here, but I'm discussing a filmmaking that's infused with the teachings of Jesus Christ. And I think that this sort of filmmaking should demand that demand changes in how we view the world. We could create a filmmaking which moves past Hollywood conventions to a more mature storytelling and aesthetic. Using Brigham City as our example, Brigham City emphasizes the sacrament and the sense of community which that ordinance builds. This is an example, a perfect example of a new aesthetic. And other filmmakers, I hope, when they enter this new discourse, will help us create a symbol system which communicates the spiritual and which communicates the struggle for transcendence. On the other hand, Brigham City uses female victimhood as the impetus for the narrative trajectory. And I think that's something that changes. This narrative tactic of threatening women or having women be killed so that the hero has something to do is as old as Birth of a Nation, and in some respects makes Brigham City no different than the recent 15 Minutes or Frequency or any other exploitive thriller. And I think this is where we can start making inroads into how we are going to create a new filmmaking, a new aesthetic, a new way of creating tension, a new way of creating solid narrative that get past Aristotle, that get past what Hollywood has told us is acceptable. And hopefully as we create our new filmmaking, as we are being visionaries, as we're taking the risks that the gospel teaches us we need to take, we're going to work really hard to do that.
My name is Emily Ashland, and I'm also a part grad student. I study, I'm a graduate student in philosophy at the New School. So Barbara's the token non-Mormon. I'm the token non-filmmaker. I really have nothing to do with film whatsoever, but I'm kind of an opinionated person, so I think that's why I was asked to be on this panel. So since my field is philosophy, the kinds of questions that I think I see my role here also as to kind of problematize this issue. Steve, talked about this term Mormon filmmaking. What is Mormon filmmaking? I also find, for me, the interesting question is not what Mormon film is, but rather why Dutcher's films in particular are making us think about how Mormons can claim this medium, or what our role is in this medium, why this medium poses specific problems for us as Mormons, or as people concerned with Mormonism. So the question that I find interesting is, what is it about film in particular that makes it problematic, as opposed to other media, other art forms, painting, music, theater, literature? And I think, excuse me, it seems to me, again, as someone who really, I watch films, I'm not involved in making films at all, it seems to me, though, that American filmmaking, in particular, which as I see, is quite different from other ways of going about making films, there are two characteristics of American filmmaking in particular that that pose problems, or that create interesting issues for Mormons. One is the fact that it's a popular medium, probably the most popular medium in the world, aside from video games, in case you didn't know. But another feature of, or another characteristic of, of American filmmaking is the fact that it's, I would say, if not essentially, then at least quite shockingly commercial. I think that creates some very interesting dilemmas for believers in Christ's gospel, for believers in these kinds of ideas. So first of all, the popularity of film as a medium. This means that the Mormon filmmaker, as I see it, really does have to take into account both the expectations of popular American culture. If you're creating a piece of popular media, if you want that to be successful, you kind of have to adopt some of the features of that genre. So a Mormon, someone involved in making a Mormon film, would have to take those into account, as well as the even more pressing and sometimes narrow conventions of Mormon doctrine and culture. So I wouldn't say that this is a problem, or I would say it's a challenge for a Mormon filmmaker. The other thing is that traditionally these two kinds of areas, these Mormon conventions, you know, movies, films like Legacy, films like, you know, even the Temple film, are sanctioned directly by the church. They've got their own set of conventions, their own ways of doing things, and then, you know, popular films, really, I think most of us don't expect any spiritual content. In fact, when there is a spiritual content, some sort of religious or spiritual content in a mainstream movie, it sort of is disconcerting and seems strange. And I think part of the reason that we find Dutcher's films strange, which I kind of do, not in a bad way, but is that it's an attempt to fuse these two genres, which up until now have been pretty much totally isolated. So it's a popular American movie that at the same time kind of sometimes feels like, I don't mean this in a bad way, a seminary film or a church film. You know, we don't expect to be feeling the spirit, you know, at Movies 8. So so the question that, I think this is an odd mixture, and I wonder if it can work. Okay, so popularity is the one characteristic. The second one is the commercial nature of American film. I'm not going to talk too much about it, but I find this very troubling. I'm not sure that, you know, for my tastes, if I want to pay $10 to see a film about the gospel, or, you know what I mean? I'm not sure if film is a vessel that can contain the spirit, basically. I'm not sure. And I think that's an issue that it would be interesting to discuss. And I think what Heather brought up about again, this goes back to conventions of popular media. Can a film that includes violence towards women, that includes elements that are directly in opposition to the gospel, can that film, a film that embraces and uses these conventions, can the Spirit be there? I think it probably can, but it's still, I think, a question worth discussing. So, those are my comments, and thank you. Richard.
Well, I think the Tom Green panel is a little more rowdy over there, so maybe we can get rowdy in here a little bit, too. I appreciate all the comments. They're great. I was taking notes furiously, and a lot of them are very helpful and help me make some comments that I think are important and respond a little bit. There's very few comments that I would disagree with at all. One comment about feeling the spirit at Movies 8. For those of you who don't know, Movies 8 is a dollar theater. And I would much rather you felt the spirit at the Cinemark 24, which is a $7 theater and makes a huge difference in the kind of movies that I can make. So now it's interesting because I'm glad to have this opportunity to speak, because it's very seldom that people ask me, and I'm in a very unique position in filmmaking, about the kind of films that we should be making next. And usually people want to tell me what movie I should be making next. But I do think I'm in a really unique position. I know the films that are being made that you all don't know anything about, films that I don't have anything to do with, that are being made by LDS filmmakers with an LDS perspective, which is what I'm particularly interested in. Just briefly, so you know about some of these, there's one called The Other Side of Heaven, which will be probably coming out this fall, and it's a story about an LDS missionary in Tonga. Extremely big budget movie. Spent about $7 million making the film. It's an insane business venture, and it doesn't have a chance in hell of making its money back, but it is something that's, I think, worth seeing. It's a beautiful film, not the film that I would make and that I think the direction we ought to go in, but definitely something that I'd recommend that you go out and support, because it'll help us. I'd recommend that you support all these films. I still do believe we shouldn't be supporting LDS filmmaking. It either needs to be good enough to lure us into the theaters and make us want to pay the money to see it, or it shouldn't be made. So I think that should continue to be the thing that drives us to the theater, is not because it's a Mormon film, but because, wow, this is an interesting film that I'd like to see, and maybe we do want to see it because it's a Mormon film. I want to see all these films. Another film that's being made now is called American Grace. It's a film about LDS teens growing up in Modesto, California in the early 70s, and interesting. And I've been offered a role in it. I don't know if I'm going to take it or not yet, but it's kind of cool. I've read the script. It's a good script, and it's kind of an American Graffiti with Mormon kids. So, and there's also a film called The Singles Ward that's being made, which is a comedy about a young singles ward in Provo, and I've been offered a role in that too. Don't know if I'm going to take that either. And then there's a group that's really pushing hard to make a film based on Jack Whalen's book, Charlie. And that's the last I'll say about that. And there's a film that's been made called Out of Step, which is a drama, kind of a spiritual awakening of a young Mormon girl as she goes to New York to become a dancer. So those are the things that are being made, and I know there's a lot of other things that are trying to get going. And it's an interesting, because we've got because we're playing in a really commercial field, it's hard to make the films that you want to make. You're always torn between what's going to do well at the box office and what you personally want to make. These issues have been addressed before, and there are experimentations to be made. I think, as I have said for the past couple of years, I think the next 6 or 8 years in LDS filmmaking is going to be really exciting, because we'll find out what we can do and what we can't do and what we shouldn't do. And now, as far as the power of cinema, I would fight tooth and nail with anybody that says Mormons don't have any business being in filmmaking. In fact, when Steve was talking about his professor, I asked him after he got done talking, was this professor that told him that Mormonism in film was death at the box office was the LDS? And yes, he told me it was LDS. And that's a man that should be slapped around a little bit, because that's what's kept us from making any progress up to this point. And we've proven it wrong. We've proven it dead wrong. Let me tell you about, and the universality is exactly what I'm really interested in now, is using the Mormon, the icons, the metaphors, the language that we have. Fortunately, we also have those icons and stuff in common with a lot of Christianity, but to take that language that's particular to us and common with other people, but to push that and be able to speak universal truths, I think that's the direction we need to be headed, because I think films like, such as some of these films that are being made, are very regional. They're very small. They're not... In other words, I think especially with Brigham City, we've kind of created this... We've taken God's Army, which was like this. I don't know how I'm describing this, but we've stretched it out somewhere and included so many more people. And now I think we need to take that, we need to stretch it even more. But what I see is some people, they saw God's Army, and then instead of pressing out, they kind of contracted, and now they're trying to make an audience, they're trying to make the audience even smaller, and trying to define this LDS filmmaking as something that I would seriously object to. If LDS filmmaking became kind of a Charlie Singles Ward, that kind of thing, I'd really object to that, because that would be isolating ourselves and taking that candle, that scriptural metaphor of the candle burning, and kind of putting something over it so that people can't see it and don't want to see it and have no interest in it. As far as the power of cinema, I was talking with my wife about this recently. Sitting in a theater watching my own films play and other people's films, but seeing how a film can make people just laugh until they hurt sometimes, or standing outside of Brigham City and watching the people come out and seeing how emotionally moved they were. And we're at this point, and film, I believe, is such an important art form, because what other art form can do that? I mean, there are films, there are things that move you. There's paintings and sculptures that move me tremendously, but I can't say that I've ever gone to the museum and just laughed until I hurt, or that I actually started weeping and had to sit down because I was so overcome. But films have done that, and films have this capacity for communicating in a most powerful way universal truths and speaking. You know, we can speak to people. We can speak to beyond our own language, because we're dealing with visuals which don't need to be translated. You can speak to Iranians in a powerful way, someone that you couldn't order lunch from, but they could see your movie and they could leave it in tears, understanding more about you. And these two people have relatively nothing in common, are fused together, and I think that's what we can do and we should do. As far as whether it bugs me when people talk about feeling the spirit in the movie theater and how strange it is. Well, it's strange because we haven't been doing it. It's not strange because it shouldn't be there. It's strange because nobody's been interested, because it's been used as such a carnal medium. And the only reason we haven't been doing it is because we've been reluctant or afraid or whatever. We haven't gotten out there and taken advantage of it and made this technology and this art form. We haven't allowed it to mature, or we haven't allowed it to fulfill the measure of its creation. I think that's a good way of putting it. What we've done is we've just allowed it to be a popcorn medium, a way of passing a few hours in entertainment, which is why it's strange now if we go down and sit down and actually come out spiritually uplifted or taught something. We think that's strange because we're used to just seeing Arnold Schwarzenegger flex his muscles and see car crashes and breasts and things like that. And we can turn that around, though. We can do whatever we want with it. We can redefine. I mean, we can eventually turn things around and even invent new ways of storytelling, which is what Heather, I believe, referred to. So that's something I'm interested in. Now, as far as, you see, and when somebody talks about, well, you can't use a violent story to summon up the spirit or to discuss spiritual matters or whatever, that's crazy to me. It's silly. It's like, it seems like whoever would say that would be people who've never, at least recently, opened their scriptures, because to me, the Lord is the best storyteller, and he's had the most popular book out there, and how he does it, he tells us these stories. He tells us the stories of people, of struggles. He doesn't tell us stories about perfect people. He doesn't tell us the stories about perfect community. How much time is given to the Society of Enoch in the Old Testament? We get that much. And how much time is given to David and Bathsheba, or et cetera, et cetera? The Lord, that's how he can teach us. We can learn by proxy. We can learn through other people's struggles. And until we get past this as a culture, we're really confined. But when we can allow our artists to... Some of you have probably heard me say this because I say it a lot, but we hold our storytellers to a higher standard than the Lord holds the prophets in his storytelling. And that's got to change. Because if we want to tell the stories that we can tell and that only we can tell, I believe, we're going to have some of the tools available to us. That doesn't mean, obviously, that you go out and you need to be making Cronenberg films or whatever and blowing people's heads up and stuff like that. That's not what I'm talking about. But I do believe you can tell any story if you're doing it from a faithful point of view. And the Lord has shown us that, and I just hope that it may take us 10 years to get our people beyond that. I mean, beyond this PG kind of mentality or G-rated mentality. Because, well, you know what I'm talking about. I don't have to tell you that. But anyway, I'm interested in knowing what you have and questions you have, because hopefully I can answer some questions in the panel. We can talk about things and let you guys feel like when you walk out that you spent your time and money well. So I'll turn it over to you.
We do have 45 minutes left in the panel, and rather than go immediately into questions, I thought we'd have a little bit of panel discussion first, but I can't not acknowledge George Smith. So, George, go ahead with your question.
I think if you...
Can you repeat sort of the question?
Is there enough sex in my movies? Well, I think this falls really into line with what Heather was talking about, that I do think, again, you can tell any story, any relationship, any conflict, and I think that's something that definitely needs exploring, but you have to do it in... We have to do it in our own way. We can't do it in the way that Hollywood does it. In other words, like Fatal Attraction, for instance, which could be viewed as a really strong anti-adultery piece, right? But I think more people left the theater and wanted to commit adultery because the sex scenes were so erotic and titillating, much more so that it overcame any kind of message that could have gotten through there. So if we do, I think, yeah, definitely there's a place for any kind of story. Again, David and Bathsheba, you got a great adultery story, and that's something that should be told, even in a modern tale. Or you just have to do it in a really smart and responsible way.
If you'll indulge the panel, we do have a few things that we had talked about discussing before we open it up to the audience. Let me begin by looping back to the original question I posed in introducing the session in terms of what is Mormon filmmaking. We had a lively discussion. Hopefully we can recreate a little bit of it here this morning about... is there such a thing, and if so, what is it? Is it films made by Mormons? Is it films made for Mormons? Is it, or is it about Mormons, whether it's a Mormon filmmaker or not? to just prime your thinking and to remind the panel. If you think about this, and if you're talking not only feature films but documentaries and the process of making film, bear with me for a minute on the list here. Arguably, what Richard Dutcher is doing is Mormon filmmaking. He's a Mormon. The themes are Mormon. Many of the actors are Mormon and so forth. What about Lyman Dayton, Where the Red Fern Grows, that film, if you remember that? Or Lee Groberg's documentaries that were on PBS, Trail of Hope and American Prophet. The church films, Johnny Lingo, Legacy, Testament, are these Mormon films? Now, here's one out of the past, and we'll see if anyone remembers it. A Mormon filmmaker named Glenn Larson, who produced a series in the 70s called Battlestar Galactica. And if that doesn't sound familiar, there was probably more Mormon theology in that TV sitcom or series than anything in memory on network TV. Trent Harris's Plan 10 from Outer Space. Does that qualify? Neil LaBute's Nurse Betty. Does that qualify? Louise Dane's Mormon Women and Depression. I suspect that does apply. But what is Mormon filmmaking, and is there such a thing? And if so, what are its characteristics? Who wants to take a shot at that? Now, we had a very good discussion before, so don't lock up on me now. Go ahead, get us loose here, Richard.
Okay. I'll get controversial. Answering questions about which is Mormon, like Lyman Dayton's films, no. I think, to me, it has to be, if you see a film and you can, and it can easily, if it had to have been made by a Mormon, in other words, I think the films we should be making are the films that only we can make. And if it's something that somebody else could make, it may be very worthwhile and wonderful films, but I don't think it qualifies as Mormon filmmaking, which I oppose. I love the title Mormon filmmaking. I think it's great. I think, and this cowardly question that people used to ask us in film school, you know, do you want to be a Mormon filmmaker, or do you want to be a filmmaker who just happens to be Mormon? And of course, all of us were like, oh no, we want to be filmmakers, and you know, and but you know, also be Mormons. And it's like, well, no, not me anyway. I want to be Mormon. I don't mind stepping out there and saying I'm Mormon, and the films that I make are going to be going through, are going to be coming out of that experience. And the cowardly Mormons who are out there making just, who are not making any reference to their theology, their culture, their beliefs, are, I don't think they belong in the same camp. I don't think, you know, they're not fighting the same war that the rest of us are. So that's my.
I just wanted to respond to that. I think that's excellent what you just said, and I think it's the sort of thing. When somebody's true to their vision, if their vision is to say certain things in their films, I think that's great. And if you want to call that Mormon filmmaking, I just don't think there should be something, let's see, how do I say this, that you set out to make a Mormon film to capture a certain segment of the audience. I think that there's something manipulative about that, and I would hope that Mormon filmmaking would not go along those lines.
Yeah, just following up on what Steve's saying, I think it's also limiting in a lot of ways. Again, I think a number of us have talked about the universality of a lot of what Richard is trying to do in his films, and I think that happens because he is using those icons and metaphors from his religious background, but he's using them to tell a story to a broader audience than just the people from that particular background. And I would not like to put him or other filmmakers in a position where they felt that they had to direct the story in a certain way to get a certain message across. Most art, you can look at a definition of, you know, is it, what is its purpose? And when you start getting too strong on the teaching end of that, or convincing propaganda side of things, you start to destroy the artistic integrity of the piece because it starts going in a certain direction. So that's why the term Mormon filmmaking in a way gets my back up, because I don't want to see it go in that direction.
Barbara, you used the term limiting. I think it has to be a limiting idea. I mean, I think if you're going to start, operating within a certain arena of using Mormon icons, Mormon ideas, I mean, there are certain conventions that you kind of have to live up to. But I don't think that this, you can call these limitations, or you can, the way I look at it is that they are the tensions that impel storytelling, that make it an interesting story. And there are challenges and opportunities for someone telling that story to, I think they make it more interesting, really. I had one other comment, too, for Richard. You talked about, I had said something about, can you feel the spirit? You know, should we be feeling the spirit? Can these traditional genres, can they be vessels for a spiritual message? And you drew the parallel to scripture stories, which I think is a problematic parallel. And I think the first question that we took kind of illustrates that for me. You mentioned that there are certain ways that a Mormon filmmaker would tell a certain story that would maybe brand them as a Mormon filmmaker, certain ways of showing things like sex, violence. And I think that's sort of what I was getting at. I mean, I think if a film sticks too closely to a genre that is instantaneously recognizable as a commercial genre, then that's going to, and again, film is a very powerful medium, and it's a pervasive medium. We've all sat through whodunits, we've all sat through violent films, we know what to expect, we know what to feel. If you stick too close to those genres, you're going to produce that effect in your audience. Is that the effect that a Mormon filmmaker should want to produce? Again, if we're going to use this term Mormon filmmaker.
Quick straw poll here. Do you want to get right in and open it up right now? There's some people chomping at the bit. I want to hear from Richard first, but I think it'll probably be easier. I think so. We'll just repeat the question, but let's go ahead and have Richard respond to Emily, and then we'll go ahead and open it up. And then I've got a question I want to ask here too, but I'll wait.
I think one of the problems we have with this label of Mormon filmmaking is because it has such a negative connotation, which is because of the junk that's come before. And that's why I think a lot of us respond so dramatically to when somebody says Mormon filmmaking. We're like, no, 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 no. Because we think of, you know, we think of the Johnny Lingos and the Legacy and stuff like that. You know, we think of things that we don't really want to be a part of as storytellers. And so I think if we can just change that's why I think it's important to embrace this label and say, no, 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 this is Mormon filmmaking, not that. And then it's something that you'd be proud to, you know, wear on your breast, which is because, you know, if you follow Joseph Smith's idea of, you know, Mormonism encompasses all truth wherever it comes from, and that's what we believe, then see, I think this is what I think, guys, like, I'm frustrated with our artistic community because I think, you know, John Steinbeck should have been a Mormon. That should have been a Mormon book. It should be Mormon. We should have Mormons writing like that. We should have Mormons making the best films in the world. And that's not that, you know, we start regressing and start to go back and say, oh, no, let's do Singles Ward movie or let's do this Charlie movie or something like that. We're regressing instead of reaching out and embracing what is rightfully ours, I think. If you consider Mormonism as someone who embraces all truth and the best of everything, then that's what we have the capacity to do, and that's what we should be aiming at. That's what the direction we should be going. Now, saying that, you also have to recognize that we're functioning in a really economic system, and that's where, you know, when you talk about, well, Mormons can't make, you know, thrillers or et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's not exactly true, because you have to appeal to. For instance, we had a screening of this a couple weeks ago for of Brigham City for the industry people in Hollywood. You had the studio acquisitions people all coming out to see this movie that people had heard about. And, you know, they walked out of the theater just extremely moved, and they didn't see it as a Mormon film. They thought it was this great, you know, film that anybody should see. We didn't get any nobody walked out of it. Nobody didn't understand it. They were quite excited about it. And, in fact, a person from Paramount said, well, why didn't you let us see this first instead of before you gave it to Excel Entertainment, you know? And I went, yeah, why didn't I let it, you know, why Paramount see that? But that's the direction that we need to be going. And, And I think also this label, you know, when you think of Mormonism, we should, of all people, we should not have this label when you think of Mormon filmmaking. I constantly have people saying you should make films, or, you know, Utah filmmaking, that's what they think of Mormon filmmaking. It has to have Utah people, a bunch of white people, a bunch of Jell-O and stuff like that. And I think that before I moved here, I had no idea what Jell-O, what connection that had to Mormonism. But still, that's the way people think about Mormon filmmaking. It's like, no, don't you understand? We of all people should understand that Mormonism is this global movement, that there's African saints who have a very different culture than we do. And the Mormon culture is not a Utah or Western culture. It's a doctrinal or a theological culture, and that's what we have to embrace, and that's what we have to use to tell our stories, and not in those doctrinal and theological icons and metaphors and those kind of things, and not the things that won't transcend, that won't go past, you know, the California border. That's not what we should be dealing in. Okay.
Okay, it's your turn, and I in the corner's been waiting long. Oh, go ahead.
But here's another interesting thought. There were these...
we'll decide whether it's interesting.
Okay, now, regarding whether we should be dealing... See, I think Mormons should be making romantic comedies. I think we should be making thrillers. I think we should be making sci-fi, whatever people are interested in. And we can use those genres as vehicles in order to say what we feel like we have to say to people or the world, or not even that. If it's not even a message, or what we have to express, what we have to expose, so people can understand who we are. You can do that. Now, an interesting parallel to that is like the Polish and European filmmakers back in the 30s and 40s, who they were under really tight restrictions because of the Nazis and all kinds of government and communist restrictions, and these filmmakers would still make a film that everybody thought was like a really pro-party film, but they'd stick these little, you know, messages, so that if anybody who was really paying attention would be understanding what was being said. You know, they'd slip these important messages, and nobody would even know the censors it would pass because it wasn't there. We need to do the same thing, but we're dealing with two different censors. We're dealing with the censors. I get myself in trouble. you know, we're dealing with the worldly, the mainstream censors who really, they don't want to know that you're sharing anything spiritual. And then we're dealing with our own censors who don't want us to, you know, venture into certain territories and stuff like that. So you kind of have to, at least in these beginning stages, you have to take those things into consideration, try to slip some things under the radar in both camps so that, you know, they're getting what you feel like they need to get, but maybe they don't even know that they're getting it. So,
in the corner, in the shade. I'll try to repeat this. If I've got it wrong, correct me. But for the tape here, is it necessary for Mormons to make Mormon films? For example, Schindler's List, is it a Jewish film regardless? It happened to be produced by someone Jewish, but if it were not, or The Apostle about evangelical Christianity, or what were your Catholic examples? A Godfather and Dogma. And the showing of the sacraments. With the violence, okay. So the question is posed both to Richard and to Emily, and I think Barbara wants to say something too, but let's... okay, let's... Richard, go ahead, and then Emily, and then Barbara. Barbara, go ahead.
Yeah. No. Now, Schindler's List, the line producer was a Mormon. That means the guy who was in charge of hiring people, getting the equipment, things like that. We're not talking about the creative producer. That's something we often get mixed up in. That was a very Jewish film, start to finish, financed and everything. So I mean, we can lay a little bit of claim to it because we had a guy in there helping to, you know, get the trucks on the set. But you don't get confused by the different titles of producer. That was not a creative producer.
I just want, on the way, actually, I'm just sort of passing the microphone, but I am Catholic, and I've seen in many films icons from the Catholic Church used in both positive and negative ways. And I think, again, I have the same feeling that hopefully LDS people would have. If I feel that those icons are used in a way that tells the story in a better way, that enables an artist to express his vision, then I'm very happy to see them used. I don't consider that they're sacrosanct or that people can't see those. In fact, I feel that's a restrictive thing. You know, if I want to cut off people from seeing those things, then I feel that that's something that's going to make other people suspicious of them, that's going to set me apart, that's going to set Catholics apart, and keep it from communicating to a broader audience. On the other hand, if I see it use those icons used in an exploitative way, in a way that I feel is demeaning to them, yes, I will take offense. So I think, you know, there's certainly a legitimate venue in any film to use religious icons if they express the artistic vision. So I'll send this down to Emily.
Okay, and I'll just say one thing. Maybe we ought to just make the films and let other people label them and argue about whether they're Mormon films or Catholic films or whatever, and we just keep making our films and, you know, let them make the labels. And
Richard, I agree. I'm not too clear on what your question was about The Godfather. That sanctifies the family.
Yeah.
Okay, so the question is, you feel that I expressed that Mormon icons could be used exploitatively in films. Do I feel that in The Godfather that is an example of that happening? I don't think the film Brigham City exploited Mormon icons at all. I really loved the last scene. It was very moving. I think the Catholic Church is a bit of a different case. And I think the film The Godfather is a bit of a different case, too. I'm not sure how to explain. I mean, Mormonism is a culture that I think is a little bit more restrictive, quite a bit more isolated than the Catholic Church. Let me try. I think, too, that what's going on in The Godfather is even broader than, I mean, you said with God's Army, bit of a narrow story, you're broadening a little bit with Brigham City. The Godfather, I think, is even more broad, in the same way that the Catholic Church is more broad than the Mormon Church. It's, you know, it's the Catholic Church. Right, Barbara? And in The Godfather, I think, I think in The Godfather, that scene, well, okay, Richard.
The Catholic Church has been around for so long, and they started telling their stories so long ago that we don't notice, you know, that you know, these icons and things that we've kind of adopted and we just taken it. It's because as soon as film was invented, the Jewish community, the Catholic community, every other doggone community out there started making films. We didn't do that. You know, we waited for some reason until the year 2000 to start making our own films. That's why whenever we show anything of our own metaphors, icons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they're so strange and shocking to us because we've been sitting around on our butts for 100 years, you know? And if we had started, you know, these things would be just... And the interesting thing now is if we really jump in and start using our way of storytelling, then that will become used in the mainstream and people will start, you know, they'll think about a religious service and they'll go, oh, yeah, Brigham City. Or they'll think about, you know... That's the way people will do. Maybe sometime next time, instead of doing The Godfather, they'll do it as a Mormon family instead of a Catholic family. That's probably not a good thing. But, or for instance, King Lear, for heaven's sakes. You know, let's talk about King Lear. What if you put that in a Mormon context? Wouldn't that be a great story? This, you know, extremely successful businessman who's like a multi-billionaire who wants to divide up his wealth at the end. What a great Mormon story that could be. But I think we ought to claim these things, you know. Like Godfather, I think, is a great film. If Mormonism encompasses all things great and true, then we should grab that. We should, you know what, Godfather, that's a Mormon movie. Anything that's really great and excellent, we should lay hold on.
I just had something I wanted to say, just a couple of things. First of all, I think the problem I have with Mormon filmmaking, with the idea of Mormon filmmaking, is that I see Mormon films as films that pull punches. And that's my only problem with it, that pull punches, that won't tell, that won't go to the mat. Akira Kurosawa, probably my favorite director, said, an artist is someone who does not avert his eyes, his or her eyes. And I think, you know, if a film will go to the mat, tell the truth of the story, then, you know, call it whatever you want. That's what I think a great film is. I had a second point, but I can't remember it. So
that's the negative connotation. That's the reputation that we've gotten, and that's why it has a bad name. I think another useful thing about the label, though, is that it does direct tension in the Hollywood Reporter, the Variety, and those people. We've been able to direct attention to us, which is what the label has served to do, because now there are people out there, you know, you talk to anybody in the studios, and you go, oh, yeah, those Mormons, they make movies. There's Mormon filmmaking. And that's a good thing, because it didn't exist 2 years ago.
There are several questions in the audience, and I'm trying to keep track a little bit. I think Louise may have been next. You're close. Here you go.
You talked about the two censorships, commercialism on the one hand, Mormonism on the other. Are you worried about, or have you had any official church coming down, Brother Dutcher, maybe you better not do, as official church set out a decree about Sunstone itself?
No, in fact, it's been quite the opposite. All I've gotten is support and encouragement, and I, at least in the filmmaking community, this idea of some kind of the institutional church bearing down and doing something is absolutely not true. I haven't had one instance. I have one guy in my ward who hates what I'm doing and lets me know about it at every opportunity. But as far as my own priesthood leaders, anywhere from my elders, quorum president, up to the President Hinckley, I've gotten nothing but encouragement. It's a cultural censorship. It's like when Brigham City comes out and it, you know, and you get the self-proclaimed censors who send me emails and letters by the hundreds. So.
Richard, what would you do if your bishop did call you into his office and ask you to stop?
I'd move.
All right.
I mean, in California, my bishop played the mission president in my movie, so I'd go back to that ward, I think.
I think the guy in the green shirt is next, I believe. Yeah. That's you, yeah. For the tape, the comment was about a documentary film on the Mountain Meadows Massacre, and why not, Richard, don't you do that for feature film?
I would love to do that and that kind of story, but let me share with you some of the economic realities of filmmaking, which for most of you, Brigham City was made for just under $1 million, okay? Which for a movie it's amazing. It's an amazing budget. Now, let me tell you how much it's made in the theaters, for those of you who don't look at the Hollywood Reporter. It's made about $850,000 now in the theaters. Now, I don't get all of that money. In fact, I get about 45 to 50% of that money, and out of that, I have to pay for all the advertising, et cetera, et cetera. So we get whittled down really quickly, so I'm sitting on... So that leaves me with... If I was dealing just with the theatrical revenues, that means, you know what? I have to make my movies for $250,000, which... that restricts me extremely in what I can do. That's why it bugs me when I keep running into people in my own ward who say, oh, we haven't gotten around to Brigham City yet. We'll watch it on video. And I want to strangle them, you know? because they don't understand that the thing that's going to kill us, and this is an economic censorship too, is if people will not, you know, and everybody, they'll see Brigham City and go, oh, it's powerful, it's amazing, I love the movie. And that's great, that feels great, but there are so many of us in our culture who just want to wait around for the videotape that it could kill this movement. It could absolutely kill this movement. So I'm kind of talking out of two sides of my mouth here, saying you should never support anything just because of what it is. You should go to see something that you actually want to see. But doggone it, if you want to see it, don't wait till video. Go see it in the theaters, because there's no way we're going to get to the Mountain Meadows Massacre, Hans Mill Massacre, any other great large-scale story until we have an economic foundation to do that. I can't go to my business people and say, you know what, this will be a great movie. It's going to lose $8 million, but hey, it's going to be great. Nobody's going to help me make that movie. What's that? Yes, after you've seen the film in the theater. At the Cinemark 24. So, but that is so important. It really is important. We need to get this out to people, because there seems to be an idea that you just make these films and they show up and, you know, there's some kind of government or church sponsorship, and that doesn't happen, you know. And our really good storytellers are going to have to either sell out and go to Hollywood or stop and go teach school or do whatever if they cannot support themselves and feed a family and find the money to tell the stories that they can really tell. So there's another economic censorship that we as Mormon filmmakers are really dealing with right now. Joseph Smith, the next film I'm doing, that's huge. It's a lot of money, and we may all lose our shirts. And it's a huge, huge gamble. And I'm going to start kicking people. If I see people and, you know, if they tell me when Joseph comes out, and if they say, you know what, we love it, we're going to see it on video, I'm going to kick them right there. Because that'll kill it all. It'll ruin it all. And it sends a message to the industry who are looking at so-called Mormon filmmaking. If they see, you know, they saw God's Army in Brigham City, it's still doing remarkably well, and we haven't opened up in all the places that we want to open up in yet. And it's going to, after it gets through its video and after it gets through its television and all that kind of stuff, it's going to make a little bit of a profit, a very little bit of a profit. But what that message sends to them is like, if they see this market start to shrink and start to contract, they're going to go, oh, one-time thing, wasn't anything, nothing that we need to pay attention to or that we need to grab onto and get out there. And so right now, it's a really challenging time over the next 2 years in Mormon filmmaking, because if a bunch of cruddy films come out, poorly made, low-budget films that are neither any good and that we as a people don't want to go see and we don't go see, then that could just strangle the whole thing. So it's really, really tricky.
We'll go to questions, one up front and one in the back. I encourage the panelists to speak and Richard to be a little less windy in your answers so we can get more questions in here. So here's a question.
Richard, I have a two-part thing, and then I'll throw a question open to you and the rest of the panel. The first is, when will the DVD of Brigham City be out, and will it have the deleted scenes and the bloopers and the director's commentary that God's Army did? Number two, there was much criticism of the sacrament meeting scene that you did in Brigham City. And I think members thought that, oh, this is new territory, it shouldn't be on TV, it's like a temple ceremony, unless you're there in person, don't watch it. This has been done on the Odyssey Channel. They've shown missionaries preparing for their farewell and having their farewell thing. It's been done several times. I don't know why the letters to the editor criticized you on that. You might want to address that. And then to the panel, do you think the R rating system is outmoded? I ran to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles the other day, saw it was R-rated. It was almost a PG What's Up doc. There's PG-13s that are horrible that people shouldn't see. There's good movies like Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan that we should see. Should the R ratings PG-13 be scrapped, and should we revise it with L for language, V for violence, S for sex, etc.?
As far as the DVD coming out, is there anyone else on the panel who would like to answer that question? The DVD out, we have to wait now because of the theatrical, because of how the film performed. It's going to be at least 6-8 months before the DVD and the video come out for Brigham City, because we have to get out there and find new ways, other ways anyway, to make money on the film. So when it does come out, it'll have all the extras and all that other thing. As far as the ordinances, we've addressed that, I think, in other sessions, but my stance on it is there are lines that I'm not going to cross ever, you know, things that I've covenanted not to reveal or talk about, and I'm not going to do it. You know, if you want to see those things in a Dutcher film, you'll wait until the end of eternity, because it's not going to happen. But as far as public ordinances or anything that's, you know, anything that would be perfectly fine for anybody to see or participate in, then why not? You know, the only reason we're sensitive about it is, again, because we haven't seen it enough, and it's a new thing. And after that, that'll be done. As far as the R-rated thing, I don't want to talk about that. So
I'll address the system. I really don't know. It's a very crude tool. Maybe it's the best that we have right now. I don't know how you. I mean, this is where it, you know, where art and standards. I don't know how they mesh. I don't know how you evaluate the value of a movie or who's ready to see it. It's the best we have right now. It allows my siblings to, you know, have at least some standards to keep their children safe from seeing certain things they don't want them to see. So that's, you know, that's where we are right now.
I think I'm in danger of taking up all of Richard's wind. Heather needs to make some comments. I wanted to go back to the previous question about the Mountain Meadows Massacre documentary, and you asked, you know, why doesn't Richard tell this story? The story's been told, as far as I see it. That documentary tells that story, and I think it's interesting that we think of it has to be a feature film. It has to have a wide release, and I just wonder. This is sort of a question that I'd like to pose to the panel. Why do we only consider storytelling? Why do we only consider these large films that lots of people are going to see to be really important films? You know, and you know, I think just to bring a little Mormon doctrine into this, my understanding is that we have to seek for truth. We have to seek it out. It may not be at the multiplex. You know, it may not be for 50 cents on Tuesday night. It may not be a blockbuster. We might have to work for it. So I guess my question is sort of, I don't know what my question is. I guess, yeah, I mean, why do, and if this medium of popular film is so restrictive, why are we persisting in, you know, in pursuing it? If it can be restrictive, if it can censor what we have to say, if it poses economic problems, which cause us to, I say us again. I have nothing to do with filmmaking, so I'll let filmmakers talk about it.
I'm just gonna speak into the microphone. I think that that's an interesting question that you raise, Emily, about the sort of documentary narrative schism that we have going on. And I think that we need to recognize that documentary is a form of storytelling, and it's just as manipulated as other things, as fiction narratives are. And I think that, and I'm interested in, sir, you kept saying that this film was authentic, and I'm sort of interested in what you mean by authentic.
You bring me $10 million, I'll make the movie. I'm a fan and a supporter of documentary films. For anybody who thinks, however, that they're not biased, you haven't seen very many documentary films. They're very editorialized and very slanted, some of them. But the fact of the matter is, and people would get angry, but this is a truth that we have to face, it's people see narrative film. People see big budget Hollywood multiplex movies. People do not see documentaries, or they don't have the impact in the culture. Yes, the story's been told very well, but how many people know about it? It's like the difference between me telling a story to 30 people in a room and me getting into the, you know, getting on a radio and talking to 1 million people or 2 million people. It's the, you know, our kids, everybody in our culture is educated now through entertainment. If you want to teach them something, you better do it through primetime television or the movie theater or music or video games, because that's the only way that you're going to get your message across. So we can sit around and moan about it and fight about it, and it's not going to do us any good. It's the same thing. If I have a message, I love to write. I would love to be a novelist. I would love to spend my life writing books. But I've had to face the sad truth that people do not read books. And if I want to get the stories out to the most people, my stories to the most people, I better make them into films or a television series, because that's the only way it's going to get out there.
Question here, but quickly in defense of documentary films, most of you have seen, I'm sure, Lee Groberg's Trail of Hope or American Prophet. Those were seen by about 25 to 40 million people, so I think documentaries can get an audience. So a question right here.
Right, but... Okay. But it's a good film. You stop anybody out there on the street and ask them what they know about Joseph Smith, they're not going to know a doggone thing. Here they will, but anywhere else. But you make a feature film that gets a lot of attention. There's controversy. Time magazine writes about it. People are reviewing it, talking about it. It's got Alec Baldwin or somebody in it, you know. Then everybody knows about the subject and everybody knows about it. I mean, that's the way it is.
40 million people.
Question.
At the risk of doing an injustice to your statement, and for the sake of the tape, basically chastisement to broaden our thinking on the topic of Mormon filmmaking beyond contemporary Mormon feature filmmaking such as Richard's film, and to look at it more inclusively and in a broad way. Have I got it? Sort of? Okay. Anyone want to take a shot at that? Then do it.
And I agree with you. I've got 3 scripts that I want to make more than anything in the world. But you know what? There's an economic reality that we as filmmakers don't like to face up to. And yes, you know what? I could go out now and I could raise $1 million and do this one film that I would love to make, that I just think it expresses so much of what I have to express. I think it'd be one of the greatest films ever made. But you know what? I also know that 4 people would go see it. I know that. And that could very easily be the last film I ever make. So, yes, you could have film. You could have food on your table, but you'll have food on your table because you're teaching school, or you'll have food on your table because you're doing something else. Because the economic, I hate to use that, the reality of it is you make one film that loses money, you probably will never make another movie. If you somehow manage to get a little bit more money to make a movie, and your second film doesn't make money, you will never make another movie, unless your name is Huntsman and you've got some guy who's going to just give you money to do it. I hate saying that, but that's the truth. Now, anybody who would say that, I mean, I think God's Army and Brigham City they're not commercial films. They're not blockbusters. They're my way of trying to use this medium to make it work economically, but to also tell my story. But I would love to. You know, that's what I'm saying. I constantly struggle with that. Here's a story that I have to tell. How do I make it commercial enough that I can go back 6 months from now and get more money to make another movie? Because And where? What is the history of Mormon film before God's Army? I mean, what is it? Where is it? Where was it? Good film. No, I'm not saying it's the only...
I just want to respond to that. I would agree. I just don't think Mormons have been out there. I don't, you know, I can't say that I know everything about Mormon filmmaking, the history, but they, you know, they haven't been out there. There's been church films which have just not been any good. Okay. I see what you're saying. Okay. The only thing that comes to mind, I am not an active Mormon, and I have to use his film as an example, not because it is his film, but because there was something in it that really moved me, the sacrament scene. I haven't been in a sacrament meeting for I don't know how many years, and I wept in that scene. I felt like that transcended any, you know, Mormon, non-Mormon kind of thing. I like that kind of thing in film. I think that's something that more filmmakers who are Mormon can do, and that they can touch Mormons and they can touch a wider audience.
No, I just want to add to that. I know I mentioned this in my presentation also, and I think that that's the future of Mormon filmmaking, really, is, again, an artist using those metaphors and icons from his religion in order to tell stories to a public. To me, that's where Mormon filmmakers should be going. It's taking something kind of from a limited world and pushing it out into the world at large, using your personal, the things that have meaning to you personally, the things that are important in your experience and your background, to tell stories that can communicate to everybody. And I think, as Steve says, that sacrament scene at the end of Brigham City, to me, is a powerful example of that. You don't have to be LDS to really feel the power of that, the emotional power.
Just a quick follow-up to that. Has anybody seen Babette's Feast? Okay, maybe one of my favorite movies of all time. Very spiritual. It quotes the Bible all the way through it. Not heavy-handed, not pushy. That would be my vision for where Mormon filmmakers could go.
I just want to, I apologize if I've been dominating things. When I come to a panel, I feel like I really want to share what I've learned. And there are very few people who are in the position that I'm in that can say, this is what I have learned, and I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to survive, not just in an idealistic sense, but I'm trying to provide for 4 kids, and I'm trying to make sure that Mormon films continue. So this is what I'm here for. I want to just, I wish we had 3 hours that I could just sit and spew out everything that I know, that I've learned, that I believe, that I think, so that other people can benefit from that. It makes me sad when these half a dozen other LDS filmmakers are getting ready to make their films, and they don't talk to me. They don't call me up and say, what do you think? What is the reality of this? What, you know, they're out raising $7 million for some movie. It's like, what are you thinking? It frustrates me that... Maybe I'm talking to the wrong forum. Maybe the things that I have to say would be more geared towards people who are actually trying to make films for LDS artists. I mean, who are actually trying to make films. But doggone it, if we don't learn from the people who are doing it, if we don't listen, I'll be wrong on some things, just as a lot of people that I asked advice from were totally wrong, and if I'd listened to them, I never would have made my film. But we need to hear those voices. And quite frankly, I was frustrated when I tried to make God's Army in any kind of LDS film because there wasn't a mentor. There wasn't anybody out there who could tell me what to do, what to avoid. I had to figure it out on my own. And now I'm here. I've been through 2 films, and I'm feeling the, you know, rockings to and fro, the economics, the artistic, everything else that's going on. And I would love to be able to let people know so that Mormon films can have a future, not just Richard Dutcher films. I've never said that that's what it's all about. I've wanted there to be, you know, half a dozen or more LDS films, the kind of films that I want to see out there. So anything that I can do to help, I want to do that.
We're down to 3 minutes. Do you still have your question in the back? Do you want to? Yeah, I've probably got time for this one and that one alone, I'm guessing. Thank you. The comment being Mormon film not taken seriously, and how do you get it taken seriously? And Emily has a point.
Make good films.
I think we need to really think about defining what we want to do with film. There are so many different kinds of films. There are so many different purposes for films. Is this film going to be, are missionaries going to carry it around as a video and show it to people? I know I did that a lot. I showed Together Forever to a lot of French people who had no idea of what to do with it. Is it going to be that kind of film? Is it going to be something for PBS? Is it going to be educational? I think we have to sort of think about what our purpose is. I'm not making any films. But what is the purpose of a film? Is its purpose to bring about some sort of spiritual awakening in the audience? Is its purpose to reach out to and educate people who don't know anything about the church? Is its purpose simply to, who is our audience? What is our purpose? As people telling a Mormon story. And I've already kind of forgotten the question. Okay.
Yeah? I want to let you guys know, I know there's a couple filmmakers here, and I just want to let you know that having spent 10 years in L.A., I know literally 100 filmmakers, directors, who made their films, made their unique personal visions of the film that they wanted to make, and will never make another movie. Because the movie did not turn a profit. They can't raise the money to make another film. So as much as we would like to think in Mormon filmmaking of just what we want to do, should do, ought to do, we have to keep in mind the reality is that are people going to go see it? Are we going to get to make another film?
I just want to commend Richard for the work that he's done and the groundbreaking that he's done for a possible definition of Mormon filmmaking for the future, and hopefully he'll be able to continue to make films. I think it's the work that he's doing is very exciting, and there's a lot of integrity in it, and it's hard work, not easy. So,
thank you to our panelists, and thank you for the questions. I'm sorry we didn't get to more of them with the time permitted. I've been asked to give a plug for a film before we leave. So tonight, 10 p.m., Wasatch 1, right down the hallway here, I'll read it, a free sneak preview of Missionary Position, a full-length feature comedy about Mormon missionaries that will have you wholly rolling in the aisles. Written and directed by Brent Jones, Missionary Position touches on many themes, including faith, integrity, ambition, sexuality, and community, earnest at times and slightly irreverent at others. 10 o'clock tonight, Wasatch 1, and Brigham City is showing all over town. So you can still see it in theaters if you want. Thank you very much.